So it is now 20 after 3 in Toronto. Let's give Greg a call, see if he answers. Okay, Flash.
Okay,
yeah. Here's Greg. Now, one of these weeks, we have to do a special Greg show, which then will be archived, and we're going to do all those things that he sent me back then, ADB stuff or something. So, Greg,
yes,
this is not a major Greg Duffel performance thing. This is
no.
You supplementing your typing finger. This is you
correct.
Commenting and us having a chance to fucking argue you back into rationality because you're fucking nuts, Greg, and you're 204 about what's going on. Okay.
Did you miss me the last couple of weeks? I was indisposed.
I did notice your absence. I didn't know whether you were pissed off or what, but I just ignored it.
I was in 2 weeks ago tonight. I was in
New Brunswick.
I was in St. Andrews, New Brunswick, at someone's 25th wedding anniversary at a place called the Rossmount Inn, which is considered to be a influential place out there. And it was a very, very big bash with an open bar, but I don't drink, but everybody else was, believe me. And it was quite a big shindig, actually. And
Greg doesn't
week,
even know modern terms. A big shindig. That's 1955, Greg.
It was a shindig. and Catherine and I even stayed over at the Rossmount Inn. We stayed overnight and got up and had a breakfast there. It was a full dinner, dancing, a band. The whole lot.
Well,
so,
you've been down there.
Yeah.
Dave, great.
Hmm?
Now, what's that echoing? What are we going to check this? Oh, it's not there now.
I don't know. I don't know why we're echoing.
Yeah, you were there a month or two ago. How do you get back down there? Do you fly, take a train?
Yeah.
What do you do?
No, what happens is I fly on Porter Airlines, which flies out of the island airport.
Yes.
And so the flight goes from Toronto, the island airport, to Ottawa, and then on to St. John, New Brunswick. And then from there, usually someone comes and picks us up or picked me up.
Yeah.
I went there about 3 weeks ago or so, and they pick us up and take us to St. Andrews. And then we're kind of stuck there. Because we can't really get out. There's a bus now, but...
you're so isolated, you can't get out.
You really can't get out. I mean, you're stuck there, and unless someone says, oh, I'm going to St. Stephen, you know, then and do you want to come along with me to go somewhere? So maybe once or twice you get out of St. Andrews. Otherwise, Catherine and I are stuck there because I don't have a car.
Well, do you have a beach or something to do?
Yeah, there is a beach there. I didn't go to the beach this time, but yeah, Catherine was there for 3 months.
Is she back home now?
Yeah, she's here now. Yeah.
So she stayed there straight through for 3 months, and you spent a short time twice there.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. Yeah, I knew you were there 2 weeks ago. You somehow indicated it.
I wanted to listen, but it just was too awkward. And then last week, just wasn't possible. So
you were back home last week, though.
I was. Kath, on the way back, Catherine had to get off the plane in Ottawa because her sister is ill. So she went to visit her in Ottawa, and then I kept going to Toronto, and then she stayed there a few days. And then I picked her up last Saturday night, so it wasn't.
That's why you missed last week.
I missed last week's, because I had to go pick her up, and then,
And you're not the type who can listen to an archive. You're not going to go back and find out what you missed. You like the live interaction.
I like the live interaction, yeah.
There's no, it's all dead if you're, if no one's there. It's not live for you. No point listening to it.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, you're not into absorbing what information we're putting out.
You want to be an aggravator,
a catalyst, a provocateur.
Well, I do enjoy listening, but...
Your remarks, Greg, are like, send Madeline to the psychiatrist, please. And obviously, this girl needs, you insult the participant.
Yeah, and it would mean nothing if I couldn't insert myself. Or it's more, I appreciate it that you read out the comments that have been written down by everyone. Because there's this alternate show going on.
That's right.
And you have the time and take the effort
to hours to do both shows.
Yeah. I mean, which we couldn't do. We had, back then when we were doing the International Connection, we had the Comrades Community Chat Portal, the CCCP, which was more or less what you have going on there.
Yeah.
But we didn't have time to start going over everything that everybody was saying, and most of it wasn't even relevant to what we were doing.
But you would comment on it occasionally. You would quote it or say something about it.
I guess I would. I'd look at it. Maybe you're right. Maybe I did. Sometimes it would be important. It was interesting listening to the program from 2001.
Yeah.
You
had missed... No, did we play it? No, we didn't. We just talked about it a couple weeks ago. So you have never heard it again.
I think I'd heard it. I'd heard it, but I was surprised that someone on the board there mentioned, said, "Oh, you've got to go and listen to this." I looked at the URL that he was giving me, and I thought, "Oh, that's God. He must be directing this for me to listen to, because I'm in the program."
I forgot that you phoned. He said you were so good. So you were on like 20 minutes. We were talking to you.
Yeah, I don't think I was that good. I mean, I was just I was fawning over you. I think that's what he enjoyed.
He liked the way you were sucking up to me.
I was reverential to you. I was.
I can't believe Bob's in the studio. Is what you were saying.
Well, what I was reminded of, I mean, I remembered it quite well, the circumstances when I related it on the chat board tonight, but what was made clearer was that in the show itself was that the only reason that I tuned in that night was because...
The message was left on your phone.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah. So there was a message on my phone. I picked it up, and I went, oh, it's on. And I looked at the clock, and I thought, oh, the show's half over, but I'll go and turn it on. And I probably started recording. I probably got the full – I imagine you have the recording on the archive because I went to get it. I probably got from the station. I probably – got the archive tape from the station and transcribed it onto and saved it onto my recording, and of course then their recording would be erased eventually because they just used it for CRTC purposes. But I believe that's how I have it, because obviously if I only knew about the show about a half an hour in, I couldn't have got the whole thing.
But right.
You have the whole thing. So
yep.
I would imagine that tape was sourced from me, more than likely.
Yeah, probably, because we weren't in a position to tape. I was not at home.
I think I made an effort to go to the station and get a copy of it and transcribe it. So
it's a good mix. It's a good meeting. Glad you got it. It's an important historical conversion.
I think Dave Neufeld's there, right? I remember coming down. You remember me coming down to the station?
Of course.
And, I rode my bicycle down.
I remember sitting in the studio and seeing you rush in, saw your profile, and you went to the other room, and then you came back. And then I don't know if we were still on the air.
I think what happened, I think I stayed out of it. I let you carry on with the program. And then, I think, anyway, and then you came out, and then we went into what would have been
room.
Near.
We stood there. We sat there for a couple hours.
Right.
I remember
visualize
it. And we talked about our worlds, the meaning of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was a great night. I mean, I was really, surprised and happy that I got to meet you, as I said, that I thought that I'd never... I wondered where you went, and nobody seemed to be seemed to know where
Jerry,
you were or
you
where
you
gone.
You heard my explanation about Jerry, embarrassed about the whole Doc.
I remember. I'd go into that station, and I'd be talking about this is maybe a year before that. I'd go in there and I said, there used to be a guy named here called Bob. Do you know about him? And everybody's going, no, never heard of the guy. And I know that Jerry Belanger would be there in the office as I'm saying this.
Because he was an employee at that point. He was running advertising.
I kept his head down, wouldn't say a damn thing.
Well, okay, his alibi is that he knew that his whole connection to me was not good among those people. That could have been his reasoning.
Yeah, probably. He goes, if I say something, somebody's going to know.
Yeah.
Somebody's left over here from that time, and I just better not. I'd
voted
love
for
to
Trump.
Know.
If he discovered that he voted for Trump, that'd be the end of it.
I'd love to know. I mean, it'd be funny to have a conversation with Jerry at this point because I haven't seen him in years. I've never really addressed that.
We should go into that. We should call him some point. He is supposedly still in Toronto. What happened around that time, he had gone to Japan and was a well-known DJ for a while.
Right.
And
Didn't he marry a Japanese woman?
Maybe. Yeah, he married somebody.
I think he did, and had a kid.
Yeah, yeah. I remember calling him a few years later or something and talking to him for a short while, but that's like 2008, 10 years ago. So I don't know what he's done since then, and you haven't bumped into him anywhere.
I would say that I last saw him I would say it was about six or seven years ago, and I saw him at around Ryerson, because he had a job there working sort of in an audiovisual department.
Mm, yes.
And you'd see him moving equipment around from one place to another sometimes. And I remember I was taking my late wife to the hospital because she was ill, and we walked over to where the hospitals were, and we walked by Ryerson, and I saw Jerry a couple of times going to work in the morning. But I haven't seen him lately. No, I don't know where he is.
When you were walking to the hospital, you'd see him.
Yeah. If we had Mary and I had an early appointment at the hospital. And by this point, I transported Mary in a wheelchair.
And you'd walk through the Ryerson campus?
Well, we walked along Girard Street.
Yeah.
And that would be close enough that Jerry would be walking in from somewhere to the west. So I'd see him or bump into him along there, and say, oh, hello, and that would be about it.
Okay, great.
But,
here's the meaning. For Mike Dyer, for Jerry, for Nelson, for everybody that I was involved with, this is to talk about something 30 years ago. 25 years ago, well, the 2001, 17 years ago, a long time ago. They have lives. They've got problems. They've got kids. They've got all the hell of being an adult, right?
Yeah.
And nothing came of what they did at CKLN. But Bob has not finished what he started at CKLN. Bob is still manifesting what he claimed he was going to do 30 years ago. And we are doing it. We're proving we had already taken over the world. We're making it figure. It's becoming obvious. So all that stuff is relevant to us, but not to them, unless they start taking the drugs.
Bob,
you Neufeld stayed alive. You have jumped on, and we're trying not to have it just be nostalgia for the old Greg. We're trying to get Greg tuned into the ongoing project, the message of the show that you were the archivist of. Yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Bob, what it is you have legs.
Yes.
And you know how to use them.
Yes, I have electrified legs. I have legs, Carolyn. That's right. But we, it's not just being a radio person. It is what we did. This is the phenomenal thing that fucking realize.
No, I get it. I get it. You're, the mission continues.
Yes. It gets actualized.
Even when the mission wasn't, I don't even think that the mission was clear them. They didn't understand the mission.
Nobody did, Greg.
No.
I barely understood it. Carolyn didn't take it seriously. But the thing is, you can say now that was the greatest show. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you couldn't get away with that. But now, because of what we have done here at Dobbstown, you're right. It was the greatest show because it had legs. It went somewheres.
Right.
But not until Ion showed up, and then we got something going. But the I don't think you could say, as you say now, it was a great show. I don't know if you'd say that 15 years ago.
I did say that.
You probably did, but nobody even knew who you were talking about.
No. I mean, I knew what I was talking about. Well, I remember when I first had you on the program, I had this...
So that's a few days later after that meeting. That's the 19th. We're on 4 days later, on the 23rd.
Yeah. I had this misconception that there'd be some kind of memory of your life at CKLN, your existence at CKLN. I thought if I remember this, there's bound to be other people that remember it. And I'm thinking, I'm doing the program that Bob... was involved in.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's bound to be people like me hanging around, sort of listening and maybe just waiting for Bob to come back, which I think that's what I was doing. When I was listening to Wayne Morris's program, I'd be sitting there going, why am I listening to this? Because I'd be thinking, some of this is just incredible nonsense.
Yeah, the MK Ultra series he did.
Yeah, it was just I'd sit there kind of, I get angry at, I'm sorry to say this, but I mean, I can, may as well be truthful. I'd be lying in bed on a Sunday morning listening to the Wayne Morris Mind Control series, which was a 47-part series. Now, when he started saying, I'm going to do a 47-part series, I'm thinking, wow, this is going to last more than a year. And then he'd have these shows on, and there'd be speeches or people talking, or he'd be doing an interview. The ones where he would do the interview were the most infuriating, because someone would say the most outlandish thing, and he wouldn't sort of burrow down and question what they were saying.
Yeah.
He would just accept almost without comment whatever sort of incredible nonsense they had just said. And I'd go, what? Why is he not questioning what's going on? They're saying things about...
Well, you had people like Kathy O'Brien on, who fucked George Bush and all that and satanic...
Oh, yeah. And there'd be no... Wayne would just... Like, she'd say the most outlandish thing about, having sex with the President of the United States when he was... whatever.
Yeah.
And Wayne would go... All right, let's talk. And then he'd just move on to another question as if nothing extraordinary had happened there. Nothing weird or unusual had occurred.
That would be the hilarity of hearing the archives now. That would be worth playing, hearing Greg being indifferent thinking it was odd.
And now I did, and so I'd be home listening to this, and I'd be sort of getting angry, but thinking, okay, well, why am I listening to this? And I'm thinking... Well, I'm listening to this out of some deep loyalty to Bob, but Bob isn't even there anymore. Bob hasn't been there for almost a decade, and I still feel the loyalty to tune in every Sunday morning, even if it's just lying in bed listening to this damn thing. I still feel compelled to have to listen because I think, well, something happened back then.
Maybe it'll happen
again. Something's good. Maybe something's going to happen again. And then,
and it did, Greg. This is where there's no time. You knew you were connected to me, and here you are today.
Right.
See, that's
then,
what
well,
you
then,
knew.
Then, I don't know whether you, I've maybe told this story several times, but I was listening one day, again, in bed on a Sunday morning, and Wayne Morris says, I'm going to be leaving the show soon. So if there's anybody out there who's interested in, you know, carrying it on, you know, just get in touch with the station. It was really vague.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's strange. Usually when someone's leaving, they've got it arranged who's going to carry on. And this guy is just saying, I'm, if anybody's, you know, if there's anybody has some interest out there, and like a request over the air. And I thought, it's rather a long story. I won't get into it about like all the ups and downs. I mean, I don't think I wanted to phone, but I happened to know somebody else just through not related to radio at all. I knew someone who had something to do with the station, and I told her about it, and she says, oh, you should get in touch with them. And I go, well, okay, I'll do it. And I didn't, and then, but she did. And that's, and then she said to me, okay, I've arranged that you can come down.
Oh, wow, you didn't do it.
No, I didn't really do it.
Jeez.
No, I didn't really do it. Someone else, you know, I sort of had said, oh, you know, I heard this over the air, and then she kind of arranged it, and then I got together with Wayne Morris, and then, you know, I just started doing the program.
No, but thinking
so I remember
right
going
now.
Down there. I remember going down there sort of for my interview, and the one thing that I put forward that was why they should consider that I would be a good candidate to do this program was because I had all of the archives of your show.
And who interviewed you, Bernard?
No, he wasn't there. It was Wayne Morris was there and the station manager at the time.
Did it mean anything that you had my archive to them?
No, I don't think it meant a damn thing to them. it was important to me.
Yeah.
I just said, I've got, and I also said I was recording the Roy of Hollywood shows when I was out in Los Angeles,
yeah.
And that I had a lot of content because that was seemed to be what was necessary.
Right.
It didn't feel like they were saying, oh, you're going to be creating content. It was, the feeling was that you're going to be playing other people's stuff.
Right.
You know, so I thought, well, because that seemed to be what they were doing at that point. I mean, Wayne Morris, when he brought me down and he was training me how to do the program, it was really just playing pre-recorded things that
well,
we get on TV.
That's what it was, in a way. We played LaRouche, Dieter, May Brussel. That's what it was. It was
right.
Playing
so
stuff from somewhere else.
I understood that, but they sort of followed on, and they were getting these sort of syndicated programs from the United States that they'd run, and
yeah.
That was about it. And Wayne told me later that he says that he did it on purpose. He put out the call over the air without he had never really told them that he was leaving. The only people who knew were the people that were listening to the program. The station management had no idea he was leaving.
And he wanted to bypass their hijacking of it.
Exactly. Which was really, really smart of him to do.
Yeah.
Because they would have put one of their usual suspects in, right, to take over that area. And Wayne Morris kind of, inadvertently, I mean, I was the only one that reacted or was caused to react to his entreaty over the air, right? So it was...
Well, you were meant to hear it. It's perfect. So let me say this, Greg. So you went on to make a really good show. You have archives of all that.
Most of it.
Why don't we put that up somewheres? On my site.
Well, okay. I mean, the International Connection shows that Daniel and I did.
Yeah. And I hopefully am on some of them, but it doesn't matter. There's lots I'm not on.
The thing is that I want to add this sentence.
The reason is your mocking of American news culture anticipates the mania that Americans are experiencing today. You would talk about Rick Salutin or whatever the guy's name, Rick somebody, some crazy guy from Texas, what a nut he was. He'd be on CNN or Fox. Then he became a politician. Remember that? You would talk about people. I knew who they were because I was in the States, but nobody in Canada knew who they were. They don't know that they're looking at the residue of those guys today. If they hate Trump, it all comes from Rick, those Rick guys, those crazy Republicans that you guys would mock. You were ahead of the game there in your content.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I didn't realize at the time, so this is what, 2005
and 6.
2002, and yeah, into through when things really started going for the show in the, after Daniel arrived and so on. I didn't realize how much we were doing what I suppose the Daily Show had been doing, that kind of thing. Because I didn't watch that, until a little bit later. I didn't realize. I realized that when I started watching it, I realized a lot of the clips that they were pulling or that they were utilizing were the same ones I was, had taken, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That I'd have to source just by recording lots of stuff and going through it, whereas they used more of a service to do it, right? We were doing it alone. They had a full staff to do a program like that.
Yeah.
And our show was longer, I guess. I guess they were doing, about 2 hours a week or something. But, getting back to the shows and what were being done, what could be done with them in terms of putting them up somewhere and so that people could hear them. The biggest, just between you and me and everybody else who's listening, the biggest problem with that is, as you might guess, is Daniel. Now,
Daniel doesn't want it out?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't really had a really in-depth conversation with him, because sometimes if we even get involved in it, talking about what can be done with the programs, he comes up with reasons why they can't be used.
And
the reason that he gives, as I think I've discussed before, and when we had Bill on, Bill was involved in the conversation, your Bill, the guy that is probably lurking there listening to you. Who's lurking about and is probably shocked by his name being mentioned. It's the copyright thing, right? That because when we were doing it over the air, we had protection in terms of sounds, music, and things that we would use when we were doing the program. Daniel's thought, at least that he's projected to me, is that when we would put those up on the internet, if we were to put those up on the internet, we're leaving ourselves open for copyright infringement, that we could be sued or something like that for the use of material over the internet that we don't have the rights to. And then we'd have to go in and start editing the programs and altering them to chop out things. Like, if it was just me and Daniel talking, well, that's fine. But if there was music or something involved that was copyrightable, then he's saying, oh, well, you know, it leaves us open to a problem. So, and I grant that that is a potential problem, you know, and then, of course, then there'd be liability, and whose liability would that be? Well, I guess it'd be both of our liability.
If you publish it in the right forum, in the right format, then you don't have to be, you don't have to compensate for that, but you can't gain compensation for it. If you're willing to release it for free, then there's no issue.
Is that in America?
On the internet. On the internet.
So you're saying that's one, like, how did I let YouTube stuff get up of programs that are in copyright and yet?
Exactly.
Is it because there's ways to do it. Money from it?
No, there's ways to do it. There's ethical or net ethical ways to do it. If you really wanted to do it, it's possible, as long as you don't want to gain from it monetarily.
Right, okay, I accept that. The other thing I think is that I think sometimes that, like, there's a lot of things being said in the program, right? And in each program that we did, and we can't even remember what most of the things that we said. I mean, this is so much material. I think maybe there's a little, you know, this is a speculation of mine. I think maybe he's thinking that he doesn't want to be held responsible for things that were said.
Yeah.
And
that was my next thing.
You know, and
say, you don't have to be responsible for any of it if you don't get money for it.
It's beyond money. It's beyond money. What I'm referring to is that, for instance, you can see all of the things that are involved in, you know, people who are being castigated for things that they said 10 years ago. They said things on a Twitter, you know, and then they're getting, like, the guy who made all those, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy movie, right, James Gunn, he's fired from this huge mega hit movie because of something that he wrote on Twitter, you know, 5-6 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever the case may be. And I think that there's a feeling that if you start putting out material that where you were providing your opinion on or riffing on or saying things, and somehow somebody, you know, hears it and takes issue with you, or you've said something that is politically incorrect or whatever, that you're going to pay a price for it. And I think that whereas from my point of view, I'm not that worried about that. From my own personal point of view, I don't think I should be. But I'm older than he is by 20 some odd years. So I think he thinks, I'm guessing here, all right? I'm speculating what his, so I'm not speaking for him here. But I think perhaps that he might think that some of the things that were said or he said or I said or whatever on the program are things that could come back to haunt him if they were out there. And I think he's thinking, well, if they're not out there and nobody has copies of them, then no one will ever know.
Hey, Greg, Bert's traveling with his family, I think, but he says, great background of C. Kellen. Greg, get on the RNA drops, and then you won't care about what copyright rules there are. If we get you on the drops, you won't care.
You can always do a leak, an anonymous leak, but it would still, I understand your reservation because you're not solely responsible for who's saying things. And it may be okay with you to have grown or to stick to your guns on different things, but maybe he's not ready to even remember what he said. So I understand.
I think that's a possibility. Yeah. I think that I remember there was some, we did it. There were a bunch of shows that were done, our later programs, some of which he wasn't involved in He kind of opted out at one point near the end of
He wouldn't be on with me.
Do you think that was it?
Yeah. Remember, he got sick of me being on it, and he wouldn't be on with me, and then I would tease him while I was on with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little bit unclear as to what happened there, but I think at one point he just wouldn't be on. I think the reason that he wasn't on, frankly, although I think, you know, I don't really remember, or maybe I don't really know, but I think the reason that he wasn't on is that he was angry about participating and doing work for CKLN.
Yeah, that sounds true. Yeah, he had a moral issue about even being associated with the place.
Yeah, he thought that any effort put towards them was something that was not worth it, you know, or was misguided energy. And I think he didn't really go into it explicitly with me, but he just kind of sort of opted out. And then, as you remember, I was doing the show alone and often with you.
Yes.
When
it was just me and you, that was great.
Yeah, the latter stages. Do you remember that time when I came in and I got into the studio and something wasn't working? I needed to go back home, and I got on my bicycle and went home, and you did the show alone.
I do remember
over
that.
Over the phone,
and I talked about something. I talked about some issue.
And I was out. I didn't even hear what you were doing. I was on my bicycle, like riding my bicycle home, getting something there, you know, fixed, and riding back to the station to pursue the rest of the program, you know, in the remaining time. I thought that was the most bizarre thing I think I ever did on that program, where I just left the program, and you,
I did a monologue.
No one was in the studio at all, except no one was there.
Yeah, right.
You were just streaming over on the
City.
Telephone.
From New York.
There was no one there at all, not a human being in that studio, except your voice coming through from the telephone and going over the air.
And I have a feeling it was controversial what I talked about. I think so? Yeah, there was something about it.
Bob?
What?
Wouldn't you like to hear it, though?
I'd like to hear all those.
It's interesting that your opinion is just.
Hey, Greg, can we put them in a secret place?
Those ones.
You can put all your shows in a secret place that people are given a code to hear.
But you see, those ones aren't really a problem. Because Daniel wasn't involved.
Let's do those.
The leak.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them that actually are in play that I could legitimately release, and I wouldn't be.
Let's call it the No Daniel Show. The No Daniel Show.
And there are quite
until
a lot
Daniel
of them.
Comes back.
Waiting for Daniel to return. Yeah. He's on his
bicycle. Waiting for Daniel.
But I remember that there was a guy. Actually, we had a guy who was a big listener to the program and like a big fan of, again, I think he was a fan of CKLN, but he really liked our program in particular. And he was a T-shirt, like a silk screener,
yeah,
who would make T-shirts.
Right. You remember him?
His name is Paul.
Yes.
And he would
Called in during fundraising. He'd be a good guy during fundraising.
Yeah, he would phone in quite often, and we'd sometimes get him involved. I'd even phone him up, and I said, look, I'm going to be doing a sketch on the program, and I need you to phone in as yourself. And I tell him how to interact with me so that the gag would work, you know, and he'd do it. And he'd do, sometimes he'd do phony phone calls for us, like phone into people and
no,
do
no,
things
he was
that
good.
We couldn't.
I like Paul.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah.
Well, I believe that he died recently.
Oh, geez.
I don't have a full confirmation on that, but I'm pretty 95% sure he's dead.
Wow.
But I remember he asked me, he had seasons of all of our programs. So we gave him many, many years of the shows. And he would, when he was at his work, at his place where he, in his own place where he would do his work, he would have these shows playing while he was working. So he'd often phone me up and he'd say, oh, I just listened to the one from something or other where you did this or you did that. You know, he'd be reminding me of things that, you know, the highlights of what had gone on. And
so
he was listening to
sets? He had made cassette sets?
No, what had happened was that when we would do the fundraising every October or whenever it was, we, Daniel and I, made full season sets of every episode of that year. And we made that available for people to obtain. So we'd make them all up. We'd make a beautiful case and pictures and
all this
have,
work you guys would do, and maybe three people
did,
would buy the thing, and
they're really handsome things. I mean, I've got copies of what we put together, and they're quite clever little things that we arranged, and either because he did stuff for us, I think we would just give him, you know, these packages, and he would get a kick out of them. And I remember he said to me, I don't have the later programs. And I said, well, I'm not sure where they are. I said, but we have them. We have all the later ones. And so I remember saying to Daniel, I said, you know, Paul wants those shows. And he said, you're not to give him those shows. And I said, well, why? He says, we don't want those shows out there. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to them. You know, if we give them to him, they could, you know, we could get into the wrong hands. And we don't need that. And I think partly this was going on because we were involved in that lawsuit with the station and all kinds of problems, you know. And I understood his caution. Well, I remember that there were shows of ours that were up on your archive. Do you remember we got in touch with you and with Sleeper or whatever, and we said, can you withdraw all of these programs from that archive so that, because we think we were vulnerable at the time. And I believe he did do that for us, or we got that done through you or whatever.
I remember that. Yeah.
But when we were in the lawsuit, episodes of our program started cropping up in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
They were trying to use the episodes that we did to prove that we were, you know, miscreants, that we were trying to like bring the station down, you know, by doing things that were illegal or would trying to make out that we were trying to bring the station down with what we were saying, which is a pretty weak argument, but under the circumstances, but you know, they were doing it. There was a certain person that was doing this. So there was a period of time where certainly it was, we didn't want any of it out there. And we knew some of it had escaped and that we'd given people stuff and people had material, but you know, there weren't that many things out there. So I think it's a complicated thing, but
okay,
certainly
great.
All
the ones I was on with you, without Daniel, we're going to put them
in. I'll try. I asked him the other day, I said, where I said, somebody got in touch with me, and they said, a friend of mine, I was talking to them, and I said that we did an interview, one of the best interviews we did on the International Connection was with the woman from Code Pink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Code Pink?
Yeah, I saw her speak in L.A. one time.
Medea Benjamin?
Yeah, yeah. Medea Benjamin.
And in fact, I just saw her on RT the other day on a program called, it's a comedy show they have on RT called Redacted Tonight. And she was at it somewhere, you know, doing something the other day. And I think it was Medea Benjamin was on our show. And it was a really good interview. And I mentioned that to somebody, a friend of mine. And she said, oh, I'd like to hear that. And I said to Daniel, you know, because we used to have the website, and we had descriptions of all of the programs that were available. Because at one time, we had all of them available. All of them, people could listen to them anytime they wanted to. Or we had descriptions, at least, of every single program that we had available. There were a few that were destroyed. But I said, where is all that stuff? Where's the website? Where's the old website we had, right? And he says, well, it's up there somewhere. And, you know, I really thought, and it's not like him, you know. Usually he's more like, oh, it's on that particular disc. But he's not that crazy about dredging up any of the material. He's kind of going, oh, well, it's not worth really looking for, you know.
Daniel.
Yeah, it's not worth it. You know, it's not, you know, I don't know, it's not worth the energy to even look and, you know, you have
so
to go
scared,
through hundreds.
You got to get this stuff, Craig. Tell him we want our stuff. Bob wants his stuff.
So, and I mean, he is right. I mean, there's shelves and shelves and shelves of digital material. It's vast. I mean, there's just tons of stuff we've got that's, I mean, not totally related to the show that we did, but, I mean, can you imagine? We were recording CKLN 24 hours a day for years.
Yeah.
Because of the whole lawsuit thing. We'd actually, like, spot through it to find things that, you know, trying to keep up with what was going on there, see whether there were things being said on the air that were clues about what was happening or whatever, you know, where they'd let loose with something, and for other reasons as well, maybe that were a bit more nefarious, but on our part. I'm going to try and find those later shows and see if we can segregate a bunch of them where, especially the ones where you were involved, because those would be the ones that I would imagine that most people who listen to you now and are involved with you would be most intrigued to hear. You know?
Yeah, what did I say that was prophetic?
And now we're talking, I mean, these are 10 years ago now.
Yeah, 11.
Right?
Yeah, 10, 11 years ago.
You know, about 10 years ago this stuff was done, and I'm sure there's a lot of things said that will seem pretty ironic or ionic, you know, if one were to listen to them today.
Yes, I think great we should do it. If it costs you anything, I'll pay you.
Okay, well, I'm going to try and find those. I know that I've never they're somewhere, but I'll dig them out.
In your house or on the internet?
No, I've got them on either discs or hard drives or something here. I have to go and start, you know, searching them out.
Okay, so let's go on to another angle.
When you were
in St. Andrew, what did you and Catherine do in the daytime? Did you have a TV?
No.
Oh, gee. Great.
No TV. No TV. Well, we did have the internet.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. We'd wake up. Well, Catherine sometimes would go for a walk around the point because it's on a little peninsula. St. Andrews is on a peninsula out into the ocean. So she has this little cottage there, which isn't, you know, it doesn't overlook the ocean, but, you know, you walk for, I don't know, 5 minutes away, and you're there by the Atlantic Ocean. And so she would often get up in the morning, go with a friend of hers, and walk around the point, you know, and what they call the point, Indian Point, I think. And what would we do? I know, we'd get up and nothing much, you know, really.
Just sit there?
Really,
in the
really
kitchen
nothing.
Table?
Yeah, pretty, you know, yeah, there'd be a lot of that. You know, we'd get up and make breakfast, and then sometimes I'd go to the library, and not often, but I'd go to the library to just get some things done that I needed to get done from here, and the most notable thing that would happen when I'd go to the library was I'd walk in and set myself down, get all of my equipment up and running and whatever I had to do. And I think this is now for the third year in a row, this young man would come in and sit down, and he's autistic, and he's kind of like, it's, you know, you can't really you wouldn't have a conversation with him in any way, but he's really put there because he's sort of sent, he's told to go there after school and wait for his mother to come off work, so they're sort of babysitting him there. Really, the librarians have sort of either agreed to or do kind of keep an eye on him there, right? He gets onto the computer and he starts like blurting out things, and I find this fascinating. I mean, there are probably people there that think, oh my God, this kid is going crazy here and things, you know, are disturbing me. I can't concentrate. Me. I'm just fascinated at all times with the things he's blurting out and what the references are. And sometimes when I sit back, I start watching what he's doing. And it's amazing. I mean, he's actually doing something on this computer. He's able to use a computer and has like all these shortcuts he's using with keyboard shortcuts, and he's flipping back and forth between screens, and there's things involved with cartoons sometimes, you know, like things are coming up, and I'm going, and some of the stuff I know something about, right, it's fascinating to watch him, and then he'll be blurting out catchphrases of these programs that he's listening to or watching. And the other thing he was doing a couple of years ago was that he'd be, like, sometimes he'd make quite a commotion, and the librarian, there are two librarians there, they're both British people, and they're quite nice, British women, older British women, and they come over and they say, Isaac, No rocking, because he'd start rocking in the chair, right? And they go, Isaac, no rocking. And he go, no rocking. And then when they would walk over to him, I noticed this as a pattern. This is a year or two ago. He doesn't do it so much now. When they would walk over to him, as they got close to the screen, he would flip. He would do a keyboard shortcut and go to another screen. And that screen would have the program called, what's it called? It's on PBS, and it's with this, I don't know, an aardvark or something, or some kind of character. I can't remember the name of it now. It's funny. Anyway, it's sort of a program that, like, parents would want their like a cartoon show that parents would want their kid to watch because they think it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, not entertaining. They think it's educational. And so he'd be doing something with the computer that had nothing to do with this. And then he'd, as the librarian gets closer, he'd flip to the screen. And it's called Arthur. The show is called Arthur. It's on PBS. And he would go, look. He'd say to him, look, it's Arthur. It's Arthur. And I was sure that he was doing this because he wanted to say to them, or he was used to doing this at home. It's like, if somebody came to his room, he'd be doing something completely different, you know, something that was interesting to him, and if they walked in the room, he'd flip to, like, this PBS so-called cartoon educational thing, and he would go, look, it's Arthur. It's like, I'm watching something that's acceptable. And then when they would leave the room, he'd go back to what he was doing. And so this, I think now for the third year, every time I would go over to the library, this kid would come in who's autistic. And
entertaining.
Yeah, it was sort of just fascinated because you think, obviously, the kid has trouble. You know, he's got a disability, to say the least. But you start watching him and you think, I think he knows something more than I do, you know? Like he has you wonder, does he really have knowledge about how to use a computer? Is he really advanced in this way? Or is this just, I don't know, does it just look that way? Is he just doing crazy things on there that have no bearing on anything? But he seems to be on a mission when he's there to do something or other. And It's quite fascinating. Of course, and it's sad, you know. I mean, the poor kid and the parents, and I've seen people who are autistic, people who have children who are autistic that are, I would say, far worse than this. And it's just, it must be terrible for the parents, and it's sort of sad. But anyway, when we go there, I guess. Catherine wants, Catherine, when I get there, I've got to start doing chores, right?
Oh, okay.
Like, I've got to start, mowing down the lawn, because she'll have left it.
Yeah.
It grows grass, and then I'll have to go and, she'll say, well, I need you to go and do this or go and do that.
Chores would be some of the things.
Yeah, like things that she needs done there that she can't do physically, and I'm out
doing.
Does she
read? What is she doing?
That's a good question. and then of course there's, the day goes by.
Does she paint? She's a painter.
No, she doesn't do that anymore. Doesn't paint anymore. I don't know. We just go there and hang out. I mean, I don't, or, then we go, she knows people there, and we'll go shopping into the town and get some food or whatever. And I mean, nothing much really. I really am at a loss to tell you much of what goes on there.
Are you there for a week or 2 weeks?
I was there for almost 2 weeks this last go, like a 2 weeks less a day.
Okay, you're back. You guys have nothing to do at home either.
Yeah, there's not much. it's not really that exciting. But there are, the day, it's amazing how the day goes by, and it seems like a lot went on. But
well, you guys watch a bit of TV, right?
We did watch. Yeah, we watched 2 hours tonight of about a show about the dark web.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know about the dark web?
Yeah.
And it's about how people were arranging murders on the dark web.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a story. It was a story about this woman got killed, and prior to her getting killed, the law enforcement had informed her that someone was on the dark web wanting her dead. And so they said, oh, you know, put up some surveillance equipment around your house and try to protect yourself around your house. But she kept living there. You know, she didn't just go, oh, I better get out of here because someone's after me. She stayed there with her husband and her child. And what appears to have happened is that the husband was the one making the requests on the dark web to kill his wife, and that he got so frustrated that after months and months and months that, like, things weren't being done to kill his wife, that he just decided to do it himself. And so he did. He killed his wife. And this is after the law enforcement came and says, well, you know, we've been directed that someone has been monitoring the dark web and has informed us that someone has put out a contract to kill you. And of course, none of them thought that it might be her own husband.
Right.
And which seems outlandish. But it turned out it was a whole 2-hour program about this site that purports to arrange to kill people that you want killed. And the bottom line was that it was all just a fraud, that this dark web site was just a way to extort money from people and not do anything, but putting out the promise that there'd be, you know, hitmen arriving in your town to, you know, to kill the person that you want killed. And people would send money by Bitcoin to these people, and then nothing would ever happen.
Right.
You know, of course, they'd always.
So this guy got frustrated. Nobody would kill his wife.
You can't trust anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He got so frustrated after so many months of making these arrangements online with this hacker, this site that said that they would kill people for you. He just went, oh, I'm just going to do it myself. You know, I can't wait any longer.
Yeah.
So he went and just did it himself.
And he got caught.
What happened was that he did get caught, yeah. And he, I mean, of course, the husband's always the person who's, is the prime suspect. And when, you know, someone's wife gets killed, it's always the husband, right?
Yep.
That they go after, whether they did it or not. But, it was a whole, two-part CBS 48 hours program that we got sucked into, and
I've been at your house and the TV seems to be on a lot.
The TV's on a lot.
I was there. That's 10 years ago.
Oh, you really? You thought that
maybe you were showing me stuff. No, I think you were showing me stuff. Yeah, like the George Foreman, some boxer at a fight with Anna Vaughn or something. Remember that case? Remember Mike Tyson had a yell out with somebody in CBC or something?
Oh, yeah, with City on City TV. Well,
you showed me that.
Yeah, that was funny, yeah. I mean, I don't know where I was. But I only recently got it'll be 3 years coming up soon that I have a sort of a big screen television.
Oh, I was there in 2014. That's maybe when I saw it.
Right. That was probably on the computer, maybe. Mm. I might have had that on the computer.
No, I remember sitting in that room with the big chairs.
Oh, yeah.
Watching TV.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm sitting in that room right now. Mm. And
the point is, Greg, that you two sit around doing nothing all the time.
I would say that's a good. Well, it's either, you know, doing things that, like chores, and like today was almost completely spent doing laundry. Now, do you ever have to do laundry out there in Hawaii?
Carolyn does it. I put it away. She starts it, gets it wet, and then I take it and put it in the dryer. And I put it away. But
yeah,
I do that during Carolyn's radio show on Monday.
You do the folding.
Yeah.
Folding and putting away. No, just placing.
I don't make it tidy. I just pile them in someplace.
Okay.
Kill stuff. But, you know, she's wearing it for herself. There's nothing. She's not in public anywhere. So it's just her underwear and pants and T-shirts, and I just pile them into the pile. But I do fold our towels.
Well, that's nice of you.
Yeah. They have to be folded. But this is during Carolyn's show. She's on the show for Monday for 2 hours, and I've got to listen. But I have to have something to do while I listen, so we do the laundry.
What do you think I should be doing?
You should be doing something expressive. You should be creating stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking... You should be making
I don't know whether you remember this.
Make a documentary about me. Use your abilities.
I don't know whether you remember this.
Remember the thing you were going to do on CKLN? Now I know why we're doing this. Forget that. Do the bit of the CKLN, whatever can be public, but make it about me, the greatest show ever, and how it's led to a world revolution. Yeah, great. Do something with the data you've got there.
Do you know, there was a couple of, like, on the last program that I listened to, and I was talking maybe on the chat line there, someone made a suggestion about animating ION. And I thought that was an interesting concept.
Mm. That'd be
taking a segment of ION and animating it.
Well, how about this? What I'm playing tonight, the 4X, the world thing through Maybank, you animate what I'm saying about this secret formula to this person he's trying to teach.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was going to ask you about something where you thought that was, you know, particularly good segment. You know, I mean, I'd like to try something, you know, something short that I can, you know, that I can experiment with and
okay,
just,
do you know the show Rick and Morty? You ever heard of that?
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, well, that is... ionic. They're always going through parallel worlds, and this is a mad scientist making new amazing technologies. That you should look at that to get an idea of what not to do. They're doing iondom in the way they present it. It's pretty striking. So you wouldn't want to do that. So you have to figure out what you're not going to do by watching.
No, I think I was thinking about. I mean, I'd want it to be. I think I'd want it to be something out of my imagination, how I feel about whatever is going on, either through color or shapes or things like that. I mean, I don't imagine ION, I imagine sort of as a shape more than anything else.
An amoeba.
Yeah, something that isn't really, you know, something moving, but...
Well, he can.
I'm not sure.
Ion can acquire any shape. So
yeah,
that's good to have the amoeba blob that anything could happen out of it.
That's how I see it. I do when I'm thinking about when I thought about the idea, and I was thinking that I'd want to portray it in sort of avant-garde type of way.
Yeah.
And see what you could get out of that, and
using different
techniques, different sort of, like to draw it all, and use different types of media to, you know, crayons or, you know, pastels or things like that. And just, anyway, I would like to experiment with something like that.
Have you got equipment at home to do animation?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Greg, there you go.
Well, all you have to do, I've got everything that I ever had, right? I mean, it's all, you know, quote-unquote obsolete, but, you know, it's everything that we used to use to do animation years ago and a little bit more. I mean, I do have, you know, we've got scanners now, right? You can scan the the animation drawings, and they can be put into a, you know, I can put them into a digital program if I really wanted to. And I mean, in a way, it's never been easier to do animation, the, you know, the way that we did it than it is now in certain respects. It's just that it's still as time-consuming as it ever was when you're doing it in the traditional way. When you're doing it with computer technology, you know, 3D or whatever, you know, then of course it's less time-consuming because, well, it's not as good. But
it's a different form.
It's quicker,
form.
Right?
Yeah. It's totally different, though.
Yeah, it's not.
I want to tell you, Greg, this is Sarah. I shared the maybe like part three of the, I just call it the Gollum and the Princess, but what is it, the Knights of Arabia or the Cobbler and the Thief? Yeah.
Oh, the Cobbler and the Thief, yes.
Okay, yeah,
how did you
so
get
I showed that?
That
to my son, who I've instilled a very strong, we do it by hand. If we can do it ourselves, then no one can stop us, like as far as artwork goes. And he had the same kind of emotional reaction as I did about the way that that is presented on YouTube. You see hand sketches, you see composite sketches, you see color, you know, but there's something really beautiful about being able to see the geometric structure that would need to be created, especially when it gets to the princess part. Noah and I were both just going, whoa, because it's absolutely beautiful. But, I mean, I would be interested to see the whole thing, but I like how it is, where it proves that you can...
Are you seeing the version on the internet where this guy, like, what's called the recobbled cut or something, where he's taken all of the material that has sort of been released or some of the stuff that was never released and chopped it all together and made it into what he thinks the film should have been? Is that what you're seeing on YouTube?
That's a good way to put it because that's what's happening, but that's not the way that I'm absorbing it. What I get from it is proof that hand art is not in vain, that I really do have a tradition to follow. There really were people, there really are people that do this by hand. As even if it's manually analog or computer-wise.
Well, that film, I mean, I can tell you that there are, well, I don't know, not quite sure what you're watching because the film was, in its release form, it's disjointed because there are segments which were done at the end just to get the thing done and weren't done all that well. But then there are other bits that were done by the originator of the film. And, I mean, if you knew how crazy it was, the amount of work that was involved to do some of the things that you're seeing going by in a few seconds, I think it would shock you. Now,
I'm not saying that the
audience should know that, but...
they should be. You happen to be talking to someone that values this kind of information, and I have a child.
Well, it would be interesting for you, you know, if you were interested, if there are particular segments that you can describe or direct me to, if you're interested in knowing how they did it, you know, I could tell you how, as best I know. I mean, I did work on bits of that film, so I know, you know, some of the material and how they how they did it. And some of it, when I look at, I have to kind of guess how it was done. But the guy who made the film, his name was Richard Williams. If there was a hard way to do something and an easy way to do it, chances are he would do it. He would make a point of doing it the hard way. would put in the most amount of work possible to achieve the result, which is why eventually he was removed from the film, and because it just wasn't going to get done. And even, in saying that, I started on the film in 1973. He'd been working on it since 1966, and the film wasn't released until 1995. So we're talking about a film that had a gestation period of 30 years, which is maybe, oh no, but
that's a major historical factor that matters to me and my child. It's really rare. It's odd that I would get to hear this stuff.
And there are bits of it that I saw it in the cinema a few times, and there are segments of it. I don't know whether you, if I say this part of the film, whether you'll know what I'm talking about, but there's a bit at the end of the film that's called the War Machine sequence, where that thief character gets caught up in this massive machine that's all built to create war. And
he's
caught up in this whole thing, and as it's destructing itself, as it's sort of falling apart, and he's somehow, the thief character is somehow working his way through the machine and getting out unscathed as everything is being destroyed in, at the same time. But he's managing by sheer luck not to be killed. And this is just a crazy amount of work. I mean, it's a stunning, it's almost unthinkable. When you watch it and you're in the business and you're watching, you think, I mean, I say that it looks like the kind of thing that people died making. It just looks like so much intricate work.
The gestation period, like you said, and the conceptual production /conceptual/production period, there were so many new mediums and ways to implement those mediums, I think, coming out. That's why it's so effective to me. I haven't seen a copy that would have aired in a theater, I don't think. I can't imagine that what I've seen would have aired because of the...
It did. I was in Los Angeles in 1995. I was working in Los Angeles in the movie business. I was going to be coming back to Canada around that time. And that's when the film was finally released in America in the form it was released. And a bunch of us from the studio, I was working in animation at the time there, and we all went to the cinema to see it. And, and I was going to be seeing, in part, some of the material that I worked on when I went there in 1973. And I did see some things that I contributed to in one form or another, and a lot of stuff that I had nothing to do with, because it was either done before my time there or after my time there. And there was a tremendous amount of stuff that I had seen when I was there that had been produced that had been cut out. I mean, it's there's so much stuff that never got into the film. I mean, even stuff that this guy has managed to... His name is Garrett Gilchrist. He's in Los Angeles. He's a strange person who seems to have a lot of energy to do lots and lots of different things. And he took it upon himself to get all of this material, collect all of this stuff, and that had not been used in the final cuts of the film, and integrate them into a new version of the film that he thinks is more like what had originally been intended. And he was able to find all of this stuff, and some of the stuff that he managed to get was material that was in production when I was there that never made it, even it didn't ever make it beyond the pencil drawings. It was,
I believe,
never...
But that's exactly the stuff that would, like, move me to tears.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, I know why.
None of it.
You have that line there. And I taught my child that. But if he's watching what people make money off of, he wouldn't know what it takes. There'd be a child that isn't taught the simple codes of geometric balance and how to use few lines for major expressions for characters. If they see a cartoon, they have no clue what's going on there. And I don't know where it came from for me, but I know my son personally really appreciates that and uses that in his strategy towards art. But I don't know why I have, but I always felt like it was important to tell him. So when you're watching, or when I was watching it, I don't believe that I've ever seen what would have been released. I think I've only seen what you're talking about has been put together now. Because it's just, it proves what it really takes. And that's why I avoided professional animation. That's the only reason. Is because it wouldn't be recognizable.
Okay, Sarah. That's it. You know, your phone's blinking. You know why that is? You got a different kind of phone?
No.
Yeah, it makes you hear it, Greg, right?
Yeah, occasionally it makes a strange noise.
Yeah. Anyways, I've had enough of this. I got to start playing the next recording.
He's done. Okay.
What's the name of the film you're talking about?
Well, it's in America. It was called it was released, I think, as Arabian Night, KNIGHT.
Okay.
And it was, but it was also released as The Cobbler and the Thief, and it had a variety of different titles depending on where it was. The Princess and the Cobbler. I think that was the release in Australia or South Africa or something. It had a very tortured existence, you know. I think it was eventually released by Miramax, which was owned by Weinstein. I think they were the last ones to have it.
All right, I got it. All right, well, thank you very much, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Bob. It was nice talking with you.
Yeah.
And everybody else.
And I guess you talk long enough, we're going to have to add this to the inventory of your being on the show. You've been talking.
I guess so.
Yeah.
There you go.
That would be a shorter thing, but you did enough to warrant archiving. Okay, but we're going to have you back in a couple of weeks to do the other stuff.
Very good.
You already deposited with me. What was that called? ADB.
Yeah. I'll have to reacquaint myself with that. And thank you. And that was Sarah I was talking to, wasn't
yes.
it? Correct. It was nice talking with her as well.
Okay, good.
Yay.
So if you stay awake, you're going to hear Nelson, this young guy, trying to make millions off of the Forex exchange, learning the formula
for
the ion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Thanks, Dr. Craig.
Bye-bye.
And we'll talk soon. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.